We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Professor Jonathan Walker Van Curen is an assistant professor at Lebanon Valley College, and this Saturday at 1 p.m., he'll be hosting a sensory-friendly performance of Tuck Everlasting. I had the opportunity to catch up with Professor Walker Van Curen to discuss his background as an opera singer and what folks can expect this weekend. And so, John, starting off here, do I call you John, Jonathan, Dr. Walker Van Curen? How would you like to be addressed today during this interview?
John is fine, thank you.
All right. No problem. So, John, can you tell us about yourself and how you got involved in the opera? Because I am very interested in that.
Yeah. So, I kind of had the traditional route into music through my formative years in elementary, middle, and high school. And then I decided in, the latter part of high school that I wanted to go to school to be a music educator. Got to school, and one of the first things they do in your first year is put you into observations in schools to realize, for all intents and purposes, to weed out the weak. And I was definitely the weak. I hold great just awe for music educators, but it was definitely not for me. So I remember after my first jury, my first year in college, I called my mom and said, I want to switch to the performance major. And she said, okay, that is fine. You just have to be the best, probably for good or bad, whatever you want to take that. And so then I was kind of in the path of just wanting to perform. And throughout my years at my undergrad, I kind of got bit by the opera bug. I think I've always wanted to be a little different. And opera was the way to do that. I always had a passion for musical theater, which I do with my students now, and opera. However, my personal performance career went through the operatic route.
So I'm just going to put this out there. A black man in opera. That was the one thing that really sparked my interest. I was like, oh man, this is a unicorn here. So exactly. How did you get involved specifically with opera? And what was it that really drew you to continually do it?
Yeah. So you are correct that I would say I'm definitely of a smaller sect of folks in the operatic career. However, I was super fortunate because in the beginning half of my career, I had the pleasure of performing in a production of Porgy and Bess, which, as you know, is an opera full of black folks. Mm-hmm. And so I, right from the get-go, had some folks that were representative of me and were able to push me along and give me the support and the "you got this" that I felt I always needed. I think the way I got into it is I saw the opera at my undergrad. They did a double bill of The Old Maid and the Thief and then The Telephone, and I was just in awe. I mean, the art form itself is a little, it's not approachable for some folks up front, but that show, it was in English, it was, singable melodies, and it was people just being up on the stage and having the ability to be larger than life, which as you probably you can tell in the in this case, I am very a very large and emphatic type of person.
Indeed.
So it was just it was something that just called to me, and then I think it was just an extension of what I had done in high school. Right, I had always been in musicals, I had always been in choirs, I had always been doing all of those things, but this just felt like the natural progression for me to be able to go on and do something that felt a little bit bigger than what I had done previously.
And your most recent performance was what?
Oh, goodness gracious. So it was definitely before the pandemic. I want to say it was a production I did in Fort Worth. I was Don Jose in La Tragédie de Carmen. So the opera that everyone knows, Carmen. And yeah.
And how did that go for you? Because like you said, this was pre-pandemic. So how was that?
Yeah. It was really, honestly, it's something that I hold quite dear to me because we did it in a fairly intimate setting in the theater that we did it in. So it was in the round. So we had audience all around us. And we had to essentially, when we made entrances, we were walking through the audience, and it felt very immersive. The little background about me is I actually had intended to quit performing right before the pandemic. So that was the last show that I was like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to give it the good old college try. and with that, my mentor, he said to me, okay, do that, and you should definitely do that for yourself. However, beyond that, I want you to just consider teaching. What you think that would do for you? And so while I was doing that, I was also auditioning and applying for teaching positions, and that's kind of taken me to where I am now. I still perform. I still have my love of performing. It was definitely a rocky and tumultuous time, but I hold that very dear to me just because it was the last thing I did pre-pandemic. And I was actually very fortunate to interview here at Lebanon Valley College on the day Pennsylvania shut down.
Oh, wow.
So it felt very like the stars were aligned in that moment.
Now you mentioned mentors. So what influence did Dr. James Rodriguez have on you for your vocal training?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I definitely credit all of my life to my mentors, my voice teachers, all of that. But Dr. Rodriguez is still the person who, if I'm having a wonky voice day, I'll shoot him a text or I'll send him a voice memo. I'll be like, can you please listen to this? It's not going the way I want. And I try to also just show that to my students too, because I think it's super important for them to know that I'm always there for them. I in no way want them to feel like they can't do anything without me, because that's not teaching. Teaching is, I want to set them up, give them the tools to leave, where then they can always come back and ask me a question, because I'm going to stay here. You know, I tell my students often, we're at a four-year institution. After 4 years or 5 years or whatever path you take here, you leave. I stay. And so I will always be here for you. I will always be here to support you. And that's exactly what Dr. Rodriguez did for me. He was not the first person to show an interest in me and show like really dedicate themselves to me, but he was the first one to really listen. I walked into my first lesson and I said, I need someone to tell me when it sounds bad. I need someone to tell me, like, give me all the tools. And if I'm crashing and burning, say, John, slow down, think about this. I've given you X, Y, and Z. And he was that person. He was that person that really just knew exactly how to communicate with me. And I think I did some of my best vocal growth, or showed some of my best vocal growth while I was at TCU with Dr. Rodriguez.
Wow. Wow. So for your advocacy work, especially with the inclusion of African American spirituals in classical recitals, why did you decide to uptake this advocacy work in opera music?
Yeah. So I was adopted at birth by a white family and a very loving family. Mm-hmm. And they're obviously still my family. I lived in a fairly rural, white predominant area. And so with that, I felt as though I did not have a connection to this music because it was not music of what I perceived as my people. Mm-hmm. And not for lack of, you know, my family really trying to show me the world and all that stuff, but it's hard when you live in an area where you are one of one. Mm-hmm. And so the more I grew in life, and I've been very fortunate to travel all over the country and see very different types of people, I started to be asked to sing this music in a way that was not true or honest to me. A lot of folks were like, oh, can you sing Old Man River? And they're like, Old Man River. And it that's not me. That will never be me. And so I took it as a way to use these stories, use this text, but share myself. And through the lens, the recital you mentioned, it's entitled Songs My Mother Taught Me. Like I said, I have a loving father and mother. However, Songs My Mother and Father Taught Me didn't have the ring, the right ring to it. So the recital's entitled Songs My Mother Taught Me. And it's songs, these songs obviously have a very specific reference. Mm-hmm. But these messages and stories and songs of compassion and empathy and sorrow were all stories that my mom and my family showed me throughout my life. Mm-hmm. And so that was my avenue to really get into this text, get into it, and share that whilst also sharing myself in a true sense, because something that I'm kind of like violently against is folks performing and it being just that performative. Mm. I want my students. I want to see people who are sharing truth, sharing honesty, and me getting up and singing Deep River in a way that's not honest to me I think I'm doing a disservice to the folks who these songs derived from, but then also to the people and the community in which it comes from.
John, can you tell me what is a sensory-friendly performance?
Yeah, so a sensory-friendly performance is essentially just a performance that is modified to create a more inclusive space. This is something that I would love to see happen all over the world. There are definitely a smaller sects of communities, theaters, schools that are doing this, but now I was super excited to bring this to LVC and bring this to the musical theater community here.
And why did you put this on? What was it? Did it cross your desk? Did you get an email from somebody? Was it, you know, a powwow at night with a friend or a colleague? And you said, we need to do this. What was it that really sparked this idea?
Yeah. So this actually is the product of me doom scrolling on social media late at night. So I was on TikTok and I saw an advertisement on TikTok of this theater that did a sensory friendly performance. And so I then went on kind of a deep dive and saw a bunch of different community theaters. TKTS, based out of New York City, is probably the most famous for their sensory friendly performances of Broadway productions that they do, where they sell out these huge Broadway theaters and they create all of these different shows and environments that are super safe and super exciting for folks of all different all different kind of backgrounds and with all different sensory needs. And so it was just really exciting to me. So then from that, I had the great pleasure of directing a production of School of Rock in the fall. And I said, well, let me see if I can do this. And I did that with the local community theater that I was directing with. And I said, okay, if this goes well here, then I want to take this to the college. I want to take this to the college's production of Tuck Everlasting that we're doing now. And it went over with like without a hitch. And we only had great feedback and great, great experiences from that. And so it was my passion and something I shared with the rest of the production team. And I said, okay, we want to do this and we're going to do this. And so we did it, or we're doing it. And we're just super excited about how this will go off on Saturday for our production of Tuck Everlasting.
So what considerations go into making a performance sensory friendly?
Yeah. So there are a myriad of different sensory needs that folks might need. So the ones that we're offering here, we're going to offer, bring the audience, lights. They're going to, instead of being completely black during the show, we're going to keep them at a low middle, just so that'll support and create a safe environment. We're going to overall have a sound reduction throughout the performance, so not so loud. Other technical aspects of the show are going to be modified. So we're eliminating any possibility of strobe lights. Sound effects are going to be introduced to the audience pre-show, but then also lessened as well. And then we're going to not at all have our performers in the audience aisles interacting with the audience, just to, again, create that space for them so that they feel safe. And then lastly, we're going to have a area that's outside of the theater for folks to come out if they need just a space to kind of separate themselves from the show. That's going to be a little quieter and give them that space. And then overall, the feedback and the words we're going to share with them is that the audience is open to making sound. If they need to get up, the performers are already going to be aware that that's going to happen, and it's fine, because if anyone, like, I can definitely sit in an audience and be fine, but some folks can't, and that's a shame that they can't go to a theater and still experience the magic of theater like I did when we were talking about me going to see the opera that first time. Because they don't feel like they might need to stand, they might need to make sound, they might need to stand up, and without fear of the audience being upset by that.
Yeah. So what kind of research and preparation goes into this?
Yes. For me, I did any social media or video that you could find on sensory friendly performance. One, that is what I did for sure as a baseline. And then for my production of School of Rock in the fall, I worked with the ARC of Cumberland and Perry counties. And they actually came into the rehearsals, offered suggestions of things that they needed, or they suggested that we change. And that was a great kind of introduction as well, and discussion just of what we should be doing and the verbiage we should be using. And then from that, for this production, I'm working with the education department here. We have two of our staff members who are serving as consultants on the production. So similar fashion, offering considerations of what we should modify, just so that it creates a safe environment. So similarly from that, they have developed the list of things like sound effects that they just want to make sure this is on a list of things that we should lessen, take out, et cetera, or we need to introduce the audience to the scene change so they're not so alarmed by it, or just those different things.
And how can sensory-friendly performances like this one benefit individuals with disability or sensory needs?
Yeah, I think on the most basic sense, it benefits them because they get to see live theater. many people, like, it is a privilege just at a baseline to be able to see live theater. That's not a privilege that I had a ton growing up, just because of the area in which I lived, which was fairly rural. We're super fortunate here in Central PA. We have the Fulton, Dutch Apple, Gretna, the Hershey Theater. But I just wanted to offer another opportunity for folks to see live theater and have it be more inviting. Because this is not only something that I'm doing to serve the outside community outside of Lebanon Valley College, but I'm doing it to serve our students too, because there are students at the college who don't feel comfortable going to a show because of the reasons or the needs that they need that aren't going to be met. And so I'm doing this to serve all of them. I try in my life to operate with a servant mentality in that I'm not doing things for myself. I'm doing things for others. And this is the biggest way I feel that I can serve a larger community, because it's like my students some of my students do, but the majority of my students don't have the dream of being on Broadway. They have the dream of being teachers. They have the dream of being a performer in a community theater show. And that's exciting. Some do have the dream of going on and doing this in life. And I want to make sure that they know that there are resources. This was so easy for all intents and purposes to put up that I want to make sure I can share that with anyone and everyone. I've shared the process with my students. It only took for us to be able to have this performance. Again, we at the college have our own space, all of those things. So it's that kind of withstanding. It cost roughly $300 to get the rights for this performance.
Oh, wow.
$300 for our community to be able to have another performance where every single person can go to.
Wow.
That's a no-brainer in my opinion.
Right. So what can other theaters and performance venues learn from this example that you all are putting on this weekend?
Yeah, I think I hope they can learn that it's possible. I hope they can learn and see that everyone deserves a space in theater. Because it's so true. It's so true and it's so needed. There have been some really great innovations, probably not the word I want to use, but innovations in performance and in theatrical performance these days, with the most recent productions of How to Dance in Ohio. That was a cast of completely neurodivergent folks. And this is kind of another just avenue to support all of these different folks again. So if we can do this, then a school could do a performance like How to Dance in Ohio, or again, on the most basic sense, do a smaller play, but make sure that you can invite folks and very verbally create a space that is safe for everyone, because that's what we need. That's what they need. These people need a space that they feel safe. And if I can say that out loud and be the advocate, not in front of them, but to support them, I will gladly be that advocate for them.
Finally, for the listener that is at home and they're on the fence and they're like, I don't know if this is for me. I don't know.
If you could make a appeal to them, what would you say? Oh goodness. If I could make an appeal, I think on the most basic level, our students are amazing. Mm-hmm. They are honest storytellers. They are real people. And it's super important for the production team and the musical theater program to put on works that are of real people for real people. The story that we're telling, Tuck Everlasting, is a children's book that has spanned, you know, years, and it was turned into a movie and then a musical. It's beautiful. The music is exciting. We want you here, and we hope that you can come, because it's so exciting, it's so beautiful, it's so honest. And again, these students are doing the work, and I just want everyone and anyone to see it.
Oh, man. Jonathan, I want to thank you for coming on the Spark today and giving us the game, as I would like to say, on this opera music and what is going down at Lebanon Valley College. I hope that we can have you come back on the show sometime soon.
100%. I would love to. Yes. Thank you so much.
Yes, my pleasure.